ticks.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Anne Heyer about faith and politics. Now, Anne, you've just finished a master's program, a three-semester program here at the University of Illinois in journalism. How did you pick this topic?
I picked this topic because it's always been something that's been of great interest to me. I've always had a whole lot of interest in faith and different religions, and just that it is a form of cultural diversity, and I really enjoy learning more about it.
What's your own religious background?
I am Baptist. I am actually Northern Cooperative Baptist.
American Baptist.
Yes, I am. American Baptist, okay. Yes. So, I was baptized, I believe, if I can remember right, at the age of 9. Yes.
Now, you're originally from Missouri, and yes, you went to college. Your undergraduate was at Truman State.
That's
college.
Correct.
Where is that?
It's in Kirksville, Missouri. It was formerly known as Northeast Missouri State, and it's a liberal arts school of about 6,000 undergrad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you're sitting here in the studio wearing an engagement ring. You met your fiancé there, and he's in law school, you say.
He is. He's in law school right now at Northern Illinois University. And that is where I'm moving to, apparently, after I graduate. So.
And you finished your master's program with this project on faith and politics. How did you go about producing this this piece we're going to hear in just a few minutes?
Well, I had a whole lot to cull from here on this campus. I had a lot of different religious groups to speak with. I had a lot of different professors, law professors, spiritual leaders, things like that. And I went to other campuses too, and I went back home to St. Louis to get some interviews as well. So there was just a lot to choose from when it came to. And I tried to choose people who are of faith, people who are who looked at this from an academic standpoint, and also people on the fringes,
And people from many different religious traditions, I understand.
That's correct. I didn't, and I didn't want to go about it in a way where I said, I want to get, the Muslim viewpoint, I want to get the Jewish viewpoint. I kind of came at it from a standpoint where I wanted to get, just basically talk a little bit about how these people from different religions, view their faith and how their faith affects society and how they feel that they use their faith to make decisions.
Now, we might let listeners know that I met you partly when you asked me if you could interview me about some of these issues. So my voice will show up. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, and I'm the director of the University YMCA. And so you'll hear my voice responding to some of the issues that Ann raises among how many others? How many total people?
Oh, my goodness. I'd want to say I interviewed about 25, 30 people for this entire thing. And I'm not quite sure if all those people made it onto the final cut, but I really think that I really am happy that I ended up with a pretty diverse viewpoint, broad range of ideas.
And how long is this piece that we're going to hear?
It's about 45 minutes long. It was originally supposed to be only half an hour, but it just kind of grew and grew in order to cover all the subjects that I wanted to. It just kind of grew to that length. So hope everything works out okay.
Now, who was your professor that you did this work under?
My professor was Nancy Benson, and I'd had her for a class before, for my first radio class. So I think, I really felt comfortable working with her, and she really knew what I wanted out of this project, and she really had got the overall feel for it. We worked collaboratively the whole time to perfect it and to rewrite the script until it just made the most sense that I possibly could.
Well, as our regular listeners know, this is a live program every Sunday from 5 to 6 Central Time here on WILL. And this WILL, of course, is a radio service of the Department of Communications of the University of Illinois. And it's in that department that journalism is found, and Anne's project was done in that department. So this is all very appropriate. I'm going to let you give a little introduction to the piece we hear, but let me let listeners know that although this is a live program, the next 45 minutes is a radio documentary done by master's student Anne Heyer, that's spelled H-I-E-R. And we're going to be listening to this documentary, and then following that, there'll be an opportunity for people to call in with comments or questions. So, Anne, if you'll give us the introduction to the piece.
When French writer Alexis de Tocqueville commented in the 1830s that religion in America takes no direct part in the government of society, but it must be regarded as the first of their political institutions, some might argue that he could have easily been talking about the recent election. The legacy of our country as one with both freedom of religion and freedom from religion has been playing out for centuries. But in modern times, new threats, greater diversity, and plenty of misinformation has made the situation far more complicated than simply whether or not to teach evolution in schools. In other words, our history and now our media and popular culture have all given rise to two Americas, one in which faith is the centerpiece, and one in which the rule of law from a secular state is the gospel truth. Here at the world-renowned University of Chicago Divinity School, students learn not only about the modern state of religion in America, but how the history of the country is affecting the way we view the role of religion today. UC Professor Bruce Lincoln says our shared heritage has created deeply different cultural focal points in our collective thought. This comes from our two sets of founding fathers, the Puritan settlers and the Enlightenment-influenced authors of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
There's a huge tension between those two positions, and it remains unresolved to this day. And different periods in our history, one of those seems to be ascendant, but the other never goes away.
Many scholars, like Lincoln, feel that this unresolved tension is playing out in the public arena as visibly as ever. Today, in the midst of the war on terror, Lincoln says religious rhetoric and justification is often used by the Bush administration.
I believe that God wants everybody to be free. That's what I believe. And that's one part of my foreign policy. In Afghanistan, I believe that the freedom there is a gift from the Almighty. And I can't tell you how encouraged I am to see freedom on the march.
They would like to persuade America that God is on our side, that this is a struggle for freedom, that freedom is a divine cause, and that everything the administration has done is tantamount to sacred necessity, that they've been acting as God's chosen agent to make a better world. Whether they sincerely believe that or not, I can't tell. If they do, they're very foolish. If they don't, they're very cynical, and they believe that all of America is very foolish.
Appeals by lawmakers and politicians to faith are almost always guaranteed to raise eyebrows and discussion, especially in academia. Janice P. is a law professor at the University of Illinois. She says when it comes to religion and faith, the system must be sensitive in ways that even the enlightened framers of the Constitution did not foresee.
The sheer diversity of what we deal with is bound to give rise to conflicts. And then I think there's just the tension that comes from, you know, our founding as, if not expressly, at least implicitly, a Christian nation. And the idea of the founders that, I mean, I think their concept of tolerance was, we'll leave the Jews and Catholics alone. That's not enough anymore.
In such volatile times, Lincoln, P., and others seem to agree that faith is not only in transition, but also in the spotlight as an uncertain nation enters into a new presidential term. In Urbana-Champaign, history has also set a tone for a diverse, vibrant, and flourishing religious community around the University of Illinois campus. As University YMCA Executive Director and Minister Steve Shoemaker explains, the U of I is home to well over 50 faith organizations, many of them the first of their kind.
The first Methodist campus church started here, campus ministry called Wesley. I think maybe the second or third Presbyterian was McKinley Church. They're all very early.
He says that's because U of I Dean Thomas Arkell Clark initiated a plan around 100 years ago to encourage churches to build religious centers and places of worship around campus.
That dean went around to the different Protestant churches and said, hey, buy land and start things here.
It turned the U of I campus into a place for new religious student groups, mostly Protestant at that time, to literally gain ground. Shoemaker says Dean Clark's refusal to grant Jewish students a large enough venue for worship
actually facilitated the creation of the Hillel Foundation for Jewish Campus Life, the founding chapter of a Jewish collegiate religious organization that is now found on college campuses worldwide.
The top of the Huss.
The top of the Huss?
Uh-huh.
In late October, it is almost time for the holiday Sukkot, the Jewish Harvest Festival, and workers are busy putting up a traditional festival canopy decorated with corn husks and fruit outside the Hillel building. Director Joel Schwitzer says remembering traditional holidays like these is only part of the work that Hillel does on this college campus. Hillel is also a place where Jews of all backgrounds can share their faith.
As I've gotten older, it's become more important to me to be a Jew religiously as well as just being involved with the community. But it's, you know, for me it always serves as an important reminder that everyone's got their own hook into Jewish involvement, and that it's important for me not to assume that you can paint the whole population with one broad brush.
Shoemaker says Dean Clark's plan is now paying even larger dividends with more diverse religious groups buying up neighboring property.
Can you reference how much you like?
What are the choices?
I'm in like a state.
Steve Shoemaker explained the unique legacy of the school and its religious diversity while attending a traditional Muslim Ramadan iftar or fast-breaking dinner. The dinner is hosted by the first chapter of the international student group, Muslim Students Association. Some of them attend a local mosque. It was built in Urbana on the border of the U of I campus. The mosque's imam, or spiritual leader, is Dr. Mujahid Al-Fayyan.
Recently, during the last, I should say, 3-4 years, the number of people who are seeking knowledge and asking for information from the mosque, maybe it's about, I should say, 10 to 15 times fold. It's increasing, okay? And people are thirsty for knowledge.
While the proliferation of different religions in the United States is adding to the cultural diversity of the nation, there's also growing conflict.
Jesus is the only way to find forgiveness of sin and life everlasting. There is no other way. How do you know? Great question. My name's Phil, by the way. What's your name?
Phil Nelson is a local collegiate evangelist from the Illinois Baptist State Association. He's also known as the quad preacher by students who are used to hearing his fire and brimstone speeches as they walk to class.
What kind of hope do you have that you're going to pass the test? See, your professor isn't going to give you the final exam the first day of class, because his job is to try and find out how much you don't know. But the professor of the universe, the God who cares about all of us, has said, you've got a final exam coming. You don't know when that day is, but I do, and I want you to be prepared for that final exam, so I'm giving you the answer.
Student spectator Mark Whaling stopped to listen in on the impromptu sermon. He says rather than the message itself, he enjoys the lively discussion.
Whenever there's a crowd like this and there's one man speaking, that means good discussion, because he usually has something specific to say. And what I like to hear is what the other students have to say about it.
U of I student Chelsea Ann Johnson was among the crowd as Nelson delivered his message. Johnson is a president of the small but tight-knit group Brothers and Sisters in Christ, or BASIC. The group, which she says is funded by Southern Baptist associations, makes itself known to campus by offering free food, drinks, and other gifts to often surprise students.
We, you know, say something like, well, yes, we want to just give you this small free gift to remind you of the free gift that God gave us in Christ Jesus. And they're usually just completely shocked.
And sometimes politics can collide and intermingle with religious dogma and doctrine. Johnson says she and most of her friends supported President Bush for re-election because of his stances on gay marriage, abortion, and other so-called moral values.
It's a very bold statement what he's doing, and of course there are lots of people who don't like it and who think it's, you know, backwards and too old-fashioned and just, you know, too conservative, but that's what we feel like goes along with what the Bible teaches us.
Johnson is part of a much-talked-about voting demographic of born-again Christians who choose candidates largely based on their religious ideals. But prominent Barnard religion professor and expert on evangelical history Randall Balmer says though conservative Christians wield significant political clout, they are not necessarily indicative of the tradition of the faith itself.
My reading of the religious right is that the religious right has become, for the Republican Party in the last couple of decades, similar to what the labor unions once were for the Democratic Party. That is the most reliable constituency for the Republican Party.
Ballmer says he is proud to be both an evangelical and a liberal Democrat, a combination which he admits seems impossible to some. But he says he is upset that his religion is being misused as a political tool.
My quarrel with the religious right and the strong identification of many religiously conservative voters with the Republican Party is that I believe those evangelical Christians have betrayed the noble legacy of 19th century evangelical political activism, which invariably took the part of those on the margins of society.
Ballmer mentions that it is important to recognize that when religion becomes overly politicized, it is often the faith itself that suffers.
I think if there's too strong an identification between evangelicalism and political conservatism or the Republican Party, I think it compromises the faith.
Not only is the Republican Party becoming more readily identified with several Christian groups, but certain political issues are also being framed in the media in terms of religion and scriptural rhetoric. U of I law professor Janice P. says these issues prompted her to offer her students classes on law and religion.
I picked the topic for the particular purpose of choosing something that I thought would be likely to provoke controversy. By picking law and religion, I hope to get, and indeed I did get, students who were deeply religious, who had real concerns about being able to practice law and at the same time stay true to their religious beliefs. I got students who were avowed atheists, students who were very concerned about the separation of church and state. So it was a wonderful mix of people.
She says the topics her class discussed concerning religion and the law today were endless, but there is one issue in particular that was one of the highlights of the recent presidential election, gay marriage. P, who says that this is the next big issue, frames the issue by separating the sacramental idea of marriage from the civil.
Your entry into the sacrament of marriage would be determined by whether or not, you know, this priest or minister or rabbi or imam, you know, representing this faith, thinks that these two people are qualified to enter into this religious institution. And the civic institution, you'd go down to the courthouse, and if you're both of age and you're not married to anybody else and, you know, you're otherwise qualified to be married, you'd do the paperwork. The president and the people who voted in favor of this marriage amendment want to make sure that those two things are not severed.
Chelsea Ann Johnson of BASIC is among those who believe that the sacrament of marriage is not separate from the civic institution of marriage. She applauds President Bush's stance.
Most of my Christian friends were very in support of George Bush for his almost courage for standing up for the sanctity of marriage as it's kind of been labeled in the media.
Steve Shoemaker of the University YMCA believes that people's minds can be changed on this highly sensitive issue depending on how the issue is contextualized in thought and rhetoric.
It's all in how you ask the question. If you ask the question, are you in favor of gay marriage, same-sex marriage? Majority of Americans will say no. But if you say, should we discriminate against same-sex couples who want to make promises to each other to be faithful and call it a holy union, then there's a big group who will say, yeah, I don't want to discriminate against them. I want to give them the same rights that other people have.
Shoemaker says he performs these holy union ceremonies for gay couples at McKinley Presbyterian because going through the rituals of marriage is important to them.
The ones I would see were ones who had decided that to make a public commitment to share their love for one another with friends and family, to make promises, to symbolize those promises with rings, to have a party with music, friends, good food, wine, all that was something they wanted to do. So for me, it was almost always a pleasure. Just like it's almost always a pleasure with heterosexual couples, because it's a good time in their life. They're happy. Hey, let's do this the best we can.
Law student Mark Kummerer is the president of a student organization called Sexual Orientation and Legal Issues Society, or SOLIS. In SOLIS, he says gay and straight law students can come together to discuss legal matters affecting the gay community. As complex as some of these issues might be, he says a possible answer to discrimination in general can be as surprisingly simple as a step out.
Studies have shown that once people realize that, you know, they're surrounded by gay and lesbian people in their everyday life, they change. And, you know, most people know gay people. And but if people aren't out, then I think it really gives a lot of it leaves an area open whereby, you know, people can use religion to justify discrimination.
He says they recognize much of their struggle as the need to pull the issue out of the religious context and rhetoric and change gay rights into civil rights discussions. He cites the actions of San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom granting marriage licenses to same-sex couples earlier this year.
A lot of people said, you know, we just weren't ready for that, and that was part of the backlash. He had said, you know, this is an issue of discrimination, and people in the future will appreciate what I did from a historical...
Yeah, that's basically true.
Most definitely. Most definitely. I think when we look back at all of the civil rights movements, you know, it's kind of unimaginable.
Kummerer says that while it is important to have the spiritual recognition of unity by a church, it is by far more essential to have the legal recognition of the state or federal government.
There's a list of, you know, 10 pages of just of benefits that you are able to enjoy if you're married to someone, which you don't necessarily think about on a daily basis, like a wrongful death suit. If your partner's killed, you know, like straight people are able to sue for things like loss of consortium and loss of economic benefit, and there's no equivalent in terms of gay relationships.
Kummerer, who is raised Catholic, says he and his group members are disappointed by what they see as the recent loss of ground, with 11 states alone on Election Day voting to put constitutional bans on same-sex marriage.
The increasing importance of gay issues in terms of politics has you know, definitely increased a lot of religious fervor. But I think that, you know, just from my experience in life, there's periods where we go through where we see, you know, progress and then a backlash and progress and a backlash. And right now I kind of see things in terms of the backlash.
The controversies surrounding abortion and stem cell research are the other major issues that flared up during the election. With all the talk in the media about moral values, it would seem that the ethical schools of thought surrounding these issues are based solely on religious ideals. However, at the St. Louis Center for Bioethics and Culture, Executive Director Barbara Quigley offers a new, secular perspective on the ethics of life. The center provides information on how to help the medical, scientific, and the community at large fully understand the ethical issues surrounding human life, what she calls the taking, making, and faking of life issues.
So when we talk about taking of life, we're talking about issues related to abortion, assisted suicide, euthanasia, infanticide, those sorts of things. The making of life issues, would we engage in vitro fertilization, prenatal genetic diagnosis, embryonic stem cell research, cloning, genetic engineering, those kinds of things, ways in which we make life. And then the faking of life issues, we're engaging in areas like nanotechnology, artificial intelligence, cybernetics, robotics, those kinds of things.
She explains that without ethics, the capabilities of scientific research are well beyond our capacity to deal with the consequences. She says the CBC tries to get people thinking outside of the proverbial box about life issues. Quigley says these matters can be understood and discussed outside of a religious context and beyond the often cliched right to life rhetoric.
I think the church at large is not necessarily recognizing, nor is the culture at large recognizing, the underlying issue here is not necessarily about simply, you know, this is a life and we can't destroy it, but that we're looking at ways of drawing circles around who's part of the human race and who isn't, or changing what it means to be humans, and some participate and some don't, and it's very troubling, very troubling.
Quigley says religion does indeed play a role in comprehending the moral concerns surrounding policymaking on these issues. But she says the center is more concerned about technological advances in medicine being used carefully to ensure that the dignity of human life is recognized and preserved.
It's part of the nature of human beings to recognize certain limits. We don't torture children. We don't randomly kill people. I mean, there's a certain sense of what is and is not right that we all carry as part of being a human being, and that's what we're really we're seeking to address and draw out. Certainly, people with a religious consciousness that are much more steeped in teaching will more readily identify where this comes from them.
At the University of Chicago, Bruce Lincoln agrees that it is vital to temper religious-based moral values with original American ideals of enlightened thinking, especially when it comes to policymaking.
People use scripture to serve their purposes, and some of those purposes exist before they find the verse that's needed. And so the operation of reading scripture in that moment is searching for what's going to confirm you in the opinions you already had.
Many educators and experts I spoke with seem to agree that in the legal world, religion can often be a stumbling block rather than a guide to the clear thinking that the law demands. Still others say that it is time for faith itself to change the world, to change from within, or for it to disappear completely. On this otherwise normal Sunday afternoon in mid-October, long lines form outside the U of I's Folinger Hall. Bodyguards are posted at every entrance, and once inside, guests pass through metal detectors and have their bags searched. That is because this is not a normal visiting scholar. Louis Farrakhan, the controversial leader of the Nation of Islam, is on the U of I campus to deliver a message to a packed house of students and community members.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my sincere honor and privilege to introduce our keynote speaker for tonight's event, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Farrakhan is often criticized for his fiery rhetoric, in which he blends the religious ideas of Islam with the ideals and scriptures from Judeo-Christian tradition. But today, he criticizes religion almost as often as he quotes from the scriptures.
The Islamic world needs reform. The Christian world needs reform. The Jewish world needs reform. Religion has failed humanity. There is more unity in a crack rehabilitation house than there is in church. Because the crack house, rehab house, that whether you're black, you're white, you're Jewish, you're Muslim or Christian, you know you've got a problem. And you're struggling to free yourself from that problem. And in your struggle, they've become family. But in all our religion, we have not become a family yet. You are Alpha, and somebody else is Omega, and they don't meet. But Jesus said, I am Alpha and Omega.
These are characteristically strong words from this speaker. But surprisingly, Farrakhan actually reserves the harshest critique for one of the most consistently controversial aspects of his own faith.
You think Muslims enslave their women? No. Some foolish Muslims do. And we got some foolish Muslims in the world. But we cover our women. You know why? Because they're sacred to us.
The role of the Nation of Islam, just like the small campus religious groups, is dual. In addition to providing an outlet for fellowship and worship, the Nation has also exerted significant political muscle, especially in the black community. In the struggle for civil rights in the U.S., the Nation of Islam and religious rhetoric in general has played an historic role, especially during the 1960s. During that time, the Nation of Islam had close ties to the influential thinker and activist Malcolm X. In contrast with other civil rights groups, such as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP, the Nation of Islam has long been thought of as a more radical and more uncompromising voice for black equality. Today, though, the message is one of unity, self-worth, and hope.
If you're created in the image and the likeness of God, and He is so wise that He could create creation and say, be, and it is, how come we can't say, be, and bring into existence something that creates jobs for our jobless people? How come we can't say, be, and fix the economy? How come we can't say, be, and fix the mental illness that our people are suffering from? How come we can't say, be, and make us truly a fraternity and a sorority?
Most students attending the speech say they thought the message that Farrakhan delivered could apply to anyone, not just African Americans. According to these eager listeners, it is essential to recognize that the role of religion is deeply intermingled with the goals of multiculturalism and the struggle towards peace. Here is U of I student Damon Coleman.
I just liked, I guess, the broadness of the subjects he touched on. It wasn't just catered to a black event or a religious event. He touched on something I think everybody could relate to, whether it be government issues or race issues or just, I think it was just a human experience that everybody could appreciate.
Al Sharon isn't interested in talking about and promoting harmony between.
Adam Sutcliffe is a U of I assistant professor of history. In a speech at the University YMCA's Lunch Forum, he stresses the need for different religious and cultural groups to recognize that one group's struggle should be seen as every group's struggle.
If we all try harder to actually listen to each other's perspectives and think about each other's perspectives, that's really what builds up hope. And what worries me everywhere, but in some ways in this country in particular, that there's a tendency towards each ethnic group focusing on its own concerns, its own perspectives, its own problems.
Sutcliffe suggests that religion can and should be acknowledged as a form of cultural diversity, which can be used to shape our values in positive ways. The common thread among these faiths is a desire not only to preserve and promote their faith on the local level, but also to educate the community about what their faith is and what it means to them. And that's also true for Puneet Chhabra, a Sikh student at the U of I.
It would be kind of like a public promise or a public oath for a person wearing this, you know, would be held accountable publicly to their beliefs.
Chhabra says his beard and turban often cause people to mistake him for a Muslim, but he doesn't mind fielding questions about his appearance or his faith. Sikhism is a monotheistic religion that is based on the teachings of Guru Nanak Devji.
I kind of feel like I have this responsibility since the religion's so small. It's kind of like a really small minority in the United States that, you know, I keep this and I tell other people when I can. But, you know, obviously don't push it on people or, you know, it's never something where it's proselytizing.
Nowhere is this responsibility more evident than in the Muslim community, where Muslims are working to educate others about their faith. Omar Galaria is the president of the Muslim Students Association, or MSA. He says he feels a responsibility to show others his faith in a light other than the often negative one portrayed in the media.
Personally, I think we are targeted, and I feel that, you know, we're targeted as a society, just because there's so much misinformation. Like, Islam itself is, you know, when 9/11 happened, not only were the planes hijacked, but Islam was hijacked too along with it.
Omar Galaria may not be the only one who thinks that, given the response to a recent Daily Illini column. Columnist Ely Devorin wrote an editorial that inflamed the anger of many students and community members when he reminded readers they cannot ignore the fact that Islam is often associated with terrorism.
I was very careful as to say, you know, the problem of terrorism is a problem within Islam, as opposed to saying with Islam, you know, within implying a smaller segment, not with the religion as a general. And a lot of people wrote in.
He goes on to say that it is up to Muslims themselves to change their own image by reaching out to the community. And that is exactly what they're doing here on the U of I campus. The Muslim Students Association's special fast-a-thon iftar fundraiser for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank was the first of its kind at the U of I. The smells of food are appealing to those who are encouraged to fast during the daylight hours of the holy month of Ramadan, just as devout Muslims do. The event was intended not only for charity, but to give participants a taste of the Muslim faith. Young Gabe Murray Inskeep attended the event with his family, but he says it wasn't his first experience with Islam.
We just recently went to the mosque.
You just recently went to the mosque. So you've heard the call to prayer before and everything like that?
I haven't heard them call the prayer, but...
What did you think about that?
It sounded really cool.
His parents, Carol Inskeep and Matthew Murray, say they came out to show support for what they say is a persecuted faith, here and abroad.
There are so many stereotypes and lies being told about Islam right now that partly it's good to keep myself educated, and partly it's important to show Muslim people here in the community that not everyone believes the slander, really, of Islam that goes on in our modern media right now, our mass media. We've gone to iftar at the mosque a few times, and there's always so much hospitality and warmth. It's just like anybody's community celebration.
I felt especially was poignant on a day like today when our military is assaulting a Muslim city.
Murray was referring to the stepped-up raids on the insurgents in the Iraqi city of Fallujah. U of I faculty members also attended. Associate Provost for International Affairs Earl Kellogg says he usually goes to the Mennonite church catty corner to the mosque.
More and more people are going into the mosque, and I've been very impressed with the mosque and the Muslim Student Association that they've really focused on trying to engage the community more effectively.
U of I religion professor and Islamic scholar Valerie Hoffman says this desire on the part of Muslims to take back their faith by educating others comes out of a true anger over terrorist acts by Islamic groups like Al-Qaeda.
Many Muslims were truly horrified at 9/11. In fact, I would say overwhelmingly, almost all Muslims were horrified at what happened on 9/11. Most Muslims, including the local Muslim community here, really refuse to believe Muslims could have done such a thing, because terrorism is not in any way endorsed by Islamic law or mainstream Muslim thinking.
BASIC President Chelsea Ann Johnson says she knows that most Muslims do not believe in violence, and she is learning more about Islam from Muslims themselves. Still, she says she is troubled by religious extremism of the Muslims on the fringes.
Muslims want the whole world to be converted to Islam. Christians want the whole world to be converted to Christianity. I think what the important thing is how are they going about it? They're often referred to as the religion of fear, because they've been known to hold a gun to someone's faith, to someone's face, and say, "Believe what I tell you to or die."
However, Muslims can point to similar examples within other religions. For example, there have been Christians on the fringe of the so-called Right to Life movement who have also killed in the name of God by bombing abortion clinics. In the local Muslim community, there are no hints of the Islamist fanaticism often portrayed in the media. And do not be fooled by the iron fence around the building on Lincoln Avenue in Urbana. The Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, or Masjid, as it is often called, is a place that invites everyone to worship and learn. The mosque imam, Dr. Mujahid Al-Fayyad, gives the prayer services at the mosque. His wife, Najla Al-Qaisi, is originally from Iraq, but Al-Qaisi says she thinks of Champaign-Urbana as home.
I consider the country I live in, it is my country. You know, now here, I'm trying to serve here, people, community, because I live here. You know, I eat from here, okay? So my friends from here, you know. My child play here, you know. So this is my country.
Despite historical stereotypes or some Christians' fears of Islamic jihadists waging war on infidels, Al-Qaisi says she and other Muslims are accepting of others and do not support violence.
Sometimes people here, because of the media, because of the, you know, they think that we are terrorists, we are something bad, we don't have manners, we, you know, all of these, you know, bad ideas. No, we have to tell, you know, we are just like you. Yes, I wear you maybe different, because this is my religion. This is something personal. This is not something, you know, involved with how I, you know, deal and interact with you and you interact with me. We are neighbors. We love each other. Most of the churches, they call, you know, the center here, and they want somebody to talk about Islam because people, they don't know that. And this is our job. You know, how to make things clear, because you will be my friend when you understand.
Al-Qaisi left behind family members in Baghdad over 20 years ago.
They are engineers, doctors, professors in the universities. But believe me, there is no money for food for them. Even I lost my mom. My mom, she is diabetic. She has heart problems. And last, you know, year, we lost her because there is no good kind of, you know, treatment, you know, and medicine there.
Al-Qaisi says she is pleased that Saddam Hussein is gone, but she is dismayed at the situation in Iraq, both as an Iraqi and a Muslim.
I am not a politician.
Yes.
You know that. But, you know, for sure I am against the war. For sure. I think there is many ways that we can solve problems. You know, I know Saddam Hussein, he is very bad. I am against him all the way.
She says despite the dire situation in her native country and challenges to be met at home, that she is still very hopeful about her life here and her work at the mosque and in the area. She says her message and the message of the mosque is one of love.
Islam, it is from the word salam. And salam, it means peace. Okay? Don't anybody tell you that we are with the war or with the killing at all. People, they don't understand Islam, you know, understand Islam, you know, the way that it should be. If they go and they see, we are against killing. We are against wars. We are against. We want to live with everybody. So this is what I believe. This is what I think Islam. You know, how to be nice.
Dr. Al-Fayyad says it is essential that the mosque, which also serves a large area beyond Champaign-Urbana, is supported by the local Muslim community.
We are open from almost 20 hours a day, and the door is open for all people who want to come to communicate with Muslims. The purpose of the masjid is to be a center of knowledge, the center of information to all people, regardless of their background, regardless of their races, regardless of their religion, regardless of their faith. It is also the place to outreach people, to go outside and reach them and tell them how good and peaceful Islam is. So, and also, we are not asking anyone else to support the mosque except its own people.
Dr. Al-Fayyad says even as they are reaching out to the community, the public is also reaching out to them.
St. Anselm said, what is theology? It's faith seeking understanding. So it's not
Islam like is not the only religion whose faithful are trying to preserve its public image. Here at the Aquinas Institute of Theology on the St. Louis University campus, Director of Admissions Ron Knapp is holding an informational meeting for prospective students. Not necessarily future priests or nuns, but just regular Catholics who want to take part in church teaching and spiritual guidance.
They're not Pollyannas. They understand this is a messy situation that the church, the Catholic Church especially, we found ourselves in, you know, in this decade. Well, what are they going to do? They still, and they're not pretending they have all the answers, but they're taking a bet on to participate in shaping a future is better than being on the sidelines and seeing what's going to come next.
In recent years, the Catholic Church has been rocked by scandals of alleged child molestation and subsequent alleged cover-ups by countless priests, bishops, and other clergymen. The Church is also losing money and religious leaders, and now finds itself struggling with its identity. Many people in the Church are trying to come to terms with the modern era, and also with recruiting new priests. That is why many Catholics, like Knapp, say that training lay ministers or unordained church leaders is part of a transitional new beginning for Catholics and a step in the right direction to get in touch with modern times. Knapp acknowledges that lay ministry is not a replacement for ordained leaders, but just a part of a newer, more collaborative effort to serve parishes. The prospective students, like Lisa Hannawinkle, seem to agree.
I do think it's a good direction, and I do think it's going in that direction. However, I also think that having priests involved is good, having more priests is good, more ordained people. And so in some ways, it's a tragedy in the church that small counties and rural areas don't have local priests in their areas.
Joan Scharf is attending the meeting tonight with her husband. She says she knows of this problem firsthand.
We're from Immaculate Conception in Centerville, Illinois, and right now we don't have a priest. We're part of a four-parish cluster. We have a parish life coordinator, and he's 75 years old and is going here to Aquinas, and he's kind of asked me to take over for him.
Preparing lay religious leaders for the Catholic Church is being pioneered by schools like Aquinas, but Knapp says it is still not totally accepted by the mainstream church, which is steeped in centuries of tradition.
In some pockets of Catholic life or Catholic parishes or Catholic structures where these grads will then go to serve and to teach, minister, I think sometimes they feel as though there's a little bit of a disconnect because this is a more maybe progressive vision, and others in the church aren't quite ready to maybe change that much.
While many, like Knapp, are willing to scrutinize and learn more about their own religion in order to keep their faith, still others say religion in and of itself is actually an obstruction to learning and logical thinking. Philosophy professor Andrew Bernstein of Pace University, the State University of New York, says the complex issues surrounding the war on terror and the unsure future of post-Arafat Palestine and Israel are made more complicated when religion is part of the mix. Bernstein was born and raised Jewish, but his views on faith have changed.
As I said before, religion is hazardous to your health, and it will lead to all kinds of suffering. Now,
Bernstein, a staunch atheist, says religion is simply an accepted and respected form of irrationality. Irrationality is dangerous, he says, because humans' greatest survival tool is their powerful ability to reason logically. Bernstein wishes people would base their morality and personal ethics not on pleasing God or going to a heaven, but rather on a desire to make the most of their lives and be responsible citizens. He calls upon people to champion the ideals and the legacy of American Enlightenment over religious values.
And the effect of the vast prosperity of America that attracts immigrants from all over the world is the Enlightenment principles the country was based on. Commitment to the mind, to reason, to applied science, to individual rights, to political economic freedom, to capitalism.
UC professor Bruce Lincoln says putting too much emphasis on pleasing God or going to heaven can lead to actions like those of the 9/11 hijackers.
It's in that moment that we see just how powerful religion is and just how dangerous it can be.
And he says September 11th isn't the only recent example of how acting in the name of God and of faith can be taken to the extreme.
I don't come away with a lot of sympathy for what they did or who they were. I think this was horrific. But their self-understanding was that of holy warriors in a righteous cause. One of the conclusions I draw is that they were not so dissimilar from what President Bush is urging on American troops. And that is, when you're going to do bloody work, I think it's a major problem to anyone's conscience.
Lincoln says he cannot necessarily understand or even believe in a God because humans cannot know or comprehend divine reality if there is one.
Religion is the human attempt to make sense of that, to think about it, to talk about it. Religion is a human system of speech and thought that is always inadequate to, the real complexity of the universe.
Lincoln says that most European countries have become secularized and that Europeans themselves cannot understand the religiosity and often the Puritanism of Americans. To put it into numbers, over 90% of Americans consistently say they believe in God, compared to Great Britain, where the percentage of believers hovers around 60%. Bruce Lincoln concedes that many of the most cherished ideals in society are underlined by religious values. But even Louis Farrakhan is careful to warn that religion, like any other influence that shapes human thinking, can be as much a force for destruction and ignorance as it is a catalyst for good.
And as long as religion, listen to me good now, religion becomes dogma and doctrine, and education becomes quotology, and politics is whatever that is, then we become enslaved in a system that wants to bind us to it rather than grow us from it so we can make something better for the future. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
The power of religion could also be clearly seen by a young French writer arriving in America in the early 1800s. Alexis de Tocqueville wrote that he couldn't be sure of the sincerity of religious Americans, but that these same people, whether earnest or not, looked to their faith to make decisions. His observations seem just as true today. In Urbana, Ann Heyer, University of Illinois broadcast journalism student.
And we've been listening on Keeping the Faith today to this radio documentary on faith and politics produced by Ann Heyer, who's in the studio with us today. And thank you for that documentary.
Thank you so much for having
me. Now, were there people that you had hoped to interview for this that you never got to?
Yes, there were actually. There was a group of people who were actually had just started a radio talk show called Radio. It was for Radio Islam, and it was a show that came on, I guess, every weeknight. And I actually, the reason why I didn't get the interview is I actually couldn't find them because I'm unfamiliar with the Chicago area. But, you know, that was one of the interviews that I really wanted to try to get, and I wasn't able to. But I feel like, you know, I was able to talk to Muslims here in the area.
Let me invite listeners to make a response to this documentary we've been listening to. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, you may call us free. 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number for listeners outside the Champaign-Urbana area. I see we have a caller already on line one. You're on the air with Ann Heyer. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you very much, Ann, for the documentary.
Thank you.
It was absolutely stunning, I thought. I do have a couple questions,
sure,
which I'll make very brief. You didn't talk a lot about environment, and I think I've in my lifetime, I'm 70 years old almost, seen a switch in the environment, and this program addresses that issue a lot. Can you comment on that, please? And I'll hang up and listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you. That's a great question. I've heard there wasn't a whole lot of talk about environmental issues that I could see in going on in the media for this recent election, although they do come up a lot, and they are often, you know, addressed religiously in the, you know, in the ways such as, you know, is man the, you know, master of the world? Is he, you know, are we meant to, you know, rule over the fish and the, you know, the fowl of the air and things like that? And I know that, you know, religion does come up when it comes to the environment. I did, you know, I heard a little bit of talk here and there. Najla Al-Qaisi, I remember, said, you know, part of what Islam does is, you know, just living not only with people in harmony, but also living with nature in harmony, too. So it is important, I think, in a lot of religions to live in harmony with nature. So,
but as you were picking topics, mainly because they came up in the most recent national election.
That's true.
This, the concern for the environment just was not brought up very much.
It was
much
not
by,
a very big issue. That's
by
correct.
Either party or by the press.
Yeah, it was not a very big discussed issue. So,
now, were there other issues that you wished would have been brought up that you could have focused on that you weren't able to get to? You, of course, covered a lot of things, but were there other issues that you thought would come up in the recent debates that did not, that are have ethical or religious base?
In the recent debates, I think one of the things that Barbara Quigley touched on was that you know, you can look at life issues in other ways than the religious issue. And, you know, the Center for Bioethics and Culture, you know, tries to look at, again, you know, those types of issues outside of a religious context. So I think, you know, we did have those life issues, you know, come at the election, stem cell research, abortion. And I think a lot of people, you know, who are not religious, you know, sometimes object to something like abortion or something like stem cell research, not necessarily because they come out of like a religious milieu or something like that, but because they come from, you know, they have these, you know, ideas that, you know, life is inherently, we should inherently value life. It's something of value, and we need to protect that, and not necessarily because any scriptures tell us to, but just because we're humans and that's part of our dignity. So I think that that's one of the things that I didn't hear a whole lot talked about in the presidential election. Both parties, I think, really tried to capture kind of a feel of faith, a feel of religion, God.
Now, in your documentary, you interviewed people from the Nation of Islam, Sikhs, Jews, Protestant Christians, Catholics, Muslims. I didn't hear, though, any Baptists, and yet you started off by saying that your own background is Baptist. Why was that?
Well, I didn't interview any Baptists. I did feel like I did get, the type of a Protestant viewpoint in there from people like Chelsea Ann Johnson and from people like Randall Balmer. I didn't, I didn't set out to try to make it a thing where, I'm going to get this viewpoint and that viewpoint, but more talk about the issues and then the people who were, involved in those issues, like not talk to Catholics just to talk to a Catholic, but talk to a Catholic because, they have certain issues affecting their religion, or Muslims have certain issues affecting their religion and the way they're seen and the way they, are trying to educate others about their religion. So I kind of went on an issues base rather than, let's make sure we cover all the, all the main religions and, check them off one by one. So that's kind of the way I went about it.
But you ended the documentary by interviewing an atheist, and who was very critical of religion in general.
Yes.
Did you plan that in advance, or did that just happen?
It kind of just happened. I realized that that this speaker was coming to campus, and his talk was about just far different from what I've been hearing. Just about how he only saw, or at least he said that he was respectful of religion, but and religious people, but he basically saw religion as something which was just the antithesis of reason. So, I thought that was interesting. And, talking a little bit about, terrorist acts and things like that, Bruce Lincoln talking about how nobody else would do this and, reason would prevent you from doing something like that. So
we have another caller waiting, but unfortunately we're out of time on the program tonight. And I want to thank our caller who we were able to include, and of course our guest tonight, Ann Heyer, who has just finished a master's degree in the Department of Journalism at the University of Illinois in the College of Communication. And we heard today her documentary on faith and politics, and thank you, Ann, for presenting it to us first here on Keeping the Faith.
Thank you.
Keeping the Faith programs are provided.
And this was an archive program on Keeping the Faith from December 19th of last year. Ann Heyer spoke on Faith and Politics, a journalistic project.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
And Steve Shoemaker will return next week on Keeping the Faith. Again, we apologize. We weren't able to bring you the live program today and provided this archive program instead. Monday through Friday at 3, join us for Odyssey from Chicago Public Radio. Tomorrow at 3, with control of the White House and Congress, the Republican Party looks like a well-oiled machine. But as it moves forward on the president's agenda, can they remain unified? Host Gretchen Helfrich and guests examine the state of the Republican Party on Odyssey tomorrow afternoon at 3 Central Time, here on AM 580. WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois.
What do you do when your seventh grade gym teacher orders some of your classmates to pile on top of you? Well, you turn your adolescent misadventures into a critically acclaimed Emmy Award-winning television series called Freaks and Geeks. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Paul Feig talks about turning his teen years into a television show. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 Central Time here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms after midnight. The low in the mid-40s with southwest winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms likely in the morning, then a chance of light rain in the afternoon. Windy and cooler with a morning high in the mid-50s, then slowly falling in the afternoon. Northwest winds 20 to 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of flurries in the evening, then partly cloudy after midnight, brisk with a low around 20 degrees.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Theater Council. Presenting David Sedaris, author, humorist, and frequent contributor to NPR and This American Life, live at the Virginia Theater on Monday, April 18th at 8 p.m. Ticket information at 356-9063.
It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.